It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. Late last month, President Trump signed an executive order on homelessness that would make it easier for states to remove unhoused people from encampments on streets. It also encourages civil commitment in some cases for people who are experiencing homelessness and have mental illnesses, and it makes room for this to happen without their consent. That's just one of several federal actions lately that the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities says will have disproportionate negative effects on people with disabilities. Tammy Jackson is with us, public policy analyst at the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Tammy, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with that executive order on homelessness. Your organization released a statement expressing a concern about many of the provisions. What was your first reaction when you made your way through that?
Well, the first reaction was that this order really is rooted in very old ideas and assumptions, and they take us back to outdated policies that were abandoned for very good reason. And my second reaction was, this really doesn't match who we know to be part of the homeless population. It really shows a lack of understanding of who is homeless right now in our state and across the country.
What do you mean by that? What is the reality of homelessness that you think is being missed here?
Well, I'm going to focus on four populations. One of the fastest populations of people becoming homeless are actually older adults and people with disabilities for some of the same reasons. Many folks who are on fixed incomes, maybe because they've worked their whole lives and have retired or are working as much as they can, but are on a program like Medicaid that requires you to stay under a certain level of income and assets, they really don't have a lot of flexibility in their budgets. So as rents go up or food costs or medications go up or their marketplace premiums go up, the amount of money they have to cover all those things soon becomes not enough. And that we see as a major reason why many older adults are becoming homeless for the first time and why many people with disabilities are also losing housing. And of course, if you're a person who needs accessible, affordable housing because you have mobility equipment or other needs, that's an even, there's even less of that housing available. Caregivers are also a factor in a growing rate of homelessness. When family members move in with somebody who needs care, sometimes they aren't on the lease or the deed. And if that person dies, all of a sudden that person has no place to live. And the other big and probably fastest growing homeless population are families. Again, for many of the same reasons, these are working people who are not earning enough to keep up with rent and maybe can't afford childcare, and they are losing their ability to stay housed.
The other provision in this executive order encourages states and local governments to make more use of some kind of civil commitment, involuntarily committing people to institutions. What do you see in that? What, as described in this order, how would that even work?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, no one is immune from mental illness. So it really does feel like if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you could become subject to this. And it is unclear who makes the decision of who has a visible mental illness or something that looks like substance abuse. Is that a bystander? Is it law enforcement? And of course, who is visibly mentally ill is also a judgment call. And one of the things that we worry about with many people with disabilities and older adults as well is there are lots of behaviors that people have that may not be in any way part of mental illness, but a part of a disability. Behaviors like stemming or a gait that is different, slurred speech, tremors, those can all be the result of medication reactions or part of a disability. And some people take longer to process, to understand communication, or take longer to communicate. So we do feel like there's a lot of subjectivity in terms of how do you determine whether somebody has something that somebody assumes is a mental illness or a substance abuse, and then what that allows the state to come in and do if they have that perception.
And finally, this executive order targets housing first policies that say, hey, let's get somebody into, like it says, housing first, and then try to see to issues like mental health and substance abuse. This very strongly pushes back against that. This could affect funding for state and local governments. What does that mean, especially for people with disabilities who you work with in Wisconsin?
Well, I think in our population, we really have the lived experience of what mass institutionalization as a policy approach has meant to individuals, families, and to communities. It's simply not a solution. It creates new problems. Forcibly taking away people's rights and putting them into institutions is demonstrably not effective. It's not treatment. It doesn't change the underlying causes of homelessness. And civil commitment is a really big deal. There's a reason it's a court-involved process, because it's the state deciding to restrict somebody's freedom and take you and keep you in a place and decide if and when to let you out. So I can't underscore the seriousness of that as a policy approach and what it could mean if it was applied to somebody that you loved or to yourself.
We're talking about how federal policy and funding changes could affect the population of people with disabilities here in Wisconsin. Tammy Jackson with us, public policy analyst and legislative liaison for the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. We've been focusing on the executive order. We also have major funding changes in this bill that just passed Congress last month, and Medicaid changes, one of those. Mm-hmm. What kind of changes are you seeing there that have you concerned here in Wisconsin?
Well, the reconciliation bill did several major cuts. First of all, it took about $1 trillion over the next 10 years out of Medicaid. And people across the country are very concerned about what that will mean for state budgets and creation of state budget holes, and what it will mean for people who rely on Medicaid for health and long-term care. There were also cuts proposed to SNAP, which is the food assistance program, and some changes to the ACA marketplaces that will likely result in higher premiums, both because the subsidies were not extended and changes in the bill. So we really have kind of a perfect storm for people who are on fixed incomes and who are worried about rising costs and keeping their care. The federal policy changes, this is one change among many that really have folks concerned who may be kind of working and piecing together and, you know, parts of various assistance programs to stay afloat. And for many people, especially those on Medicaid, they may rely on Medicaid and food assistance and housing vouchers to create a life that is stable. And right now, multiple aspects of those programs are in danger of becoming cut, which really leads to a big population of people who's kind of getting hit from all sides at the same time.
Are you getting a lot of questions at your organization from people, from caregivers, from local nonprofits about just sorting through all the things that are changing here?
There is a tremendous amount of uncertainty, across the board. And I would say that we are hearing daily from people with disabilities and caregivers, many of whom rely on a Medicaid program for their health care themselves, both paid caregivers and unpaid family caregivers, who are really uncertain about, what this means for them. They've grown to rely on these programs being fairly stable, and that is not what it feels like to them right now. And I do think that a lot of the folks that we work with daily are saying, hey, if I get any less help than I have right now, the house of cards tumbles down. And they're very aware of what it would mean to them and their lives and their families if anything changes and they ended up getting less care and less help than they have now.
On a practical level, the house of cards tumbling, what would that mean? Does that mean stopping medications, losing housing? What are some of the consequences you're worried about here?
Yeah, I think a lot of families are worried, about all of those things, frankly. You know, will I lose my health care? If I have a reduction in my food assistance, what does that mean that I, you know, will I be able to eat? You know, if I'm on a fixed income and my supports or my costs change, do I lose my housing? And for many people in our population, you know, we have lots of folks who need stable, reliable care over a long period of time. And we have a lot of family caregivers who are providing most of that care and who are aging. So for our population, it also really is a future worry of not only what happens tomorrow and next month, but next year and the next 5 years. And folks are really, really concerned that the lives that they have built are potentially going to be frittered away. And we have many, many people with disabilities who are saying, if I get less help than I have now, I'm going to end up in an institution, which is exactly the place they don't want to be.
In our last minute or so, for someone who's listening, who has a developmental disability or is a family or other caregiver for them, and they have so many question marks right now, where do you recommend they start just to figure out what these changes mean for them?
I think that we're in a prolonged period where we aren't going to know answers. Part of what the bill requires is for the federal agency, the Centers for Medicaid Services, to come up with a rule to tell states how to do certain things. And that isn't going to be out until next June. So right now, things are stable. The state budget passed the cost to continue for Medicaid. And we're in this kind of wait and see period. People should keep their contact information up to date with our Wisconsin Department of Health Services, so that when we start understanding more about what changes are required and there starts to be a lot of communication about that, people will be primed to get that and receive that.
And we'll leave it there. Tammy, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you.
That's Tammy Jackson with the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities.